everybody. My name is Trench Reynolds, and welcome to episode number 2 of Back in the Trench. First up, as I always seem to need to do, I have to apologize to all my listeners, both Patreon and public, for not sticking to my proposed schedule of releasing these episodes once a week. Unfortunately, some things in the real world take precedence. It also doesn't help that throughout my life I've had trouble with schedules, keeping deadlines, and I have little to no organizational skills. Anyway, in this podcast, we go back to somewhere in the past 21 years to a crime that I featured on my website that may have been lost to the public's memory. In this episode, we'll be discussing child trafficking and how it really happened back in 2011. But before we get started, this show is supported by my listeners at Patreon. Just a dollar a month goes a long way to help keep the podcast's website ad-free and independent. Anyone who signs up at the $1 level or more will not only receive Back in the Trench a week early, theoretically, but will also receive a small thank you gift from me as well. All you need to do is pay $1 for 1 month, and you'll have lifetime access to the Patreon feed for this podcast. This information can be found at TrenchReynolds.com, and if you'd like to make a one-time donation, you can do so at PayPal.me/TrenchReynolds. You know, I wasn't always just a school shooting guy when it came to crime blogging slash podcasting. Although 2021 has kept me incredibly busy in that department, there was a time that I was also a crusader against human trafficking. Human trafficking is putting it politely for headlines, but in actuality, I was rallying against sex trafficking, specifically the online trafficking of women and children that took place openly on marketplace sites like Craigslist and Backpage. At the time, I was posting these stories on a website called Craig's Crime List. CCL was probably the most success I had in making any kind of real change when it came to crime. While I'm not delusional to think that I'm wholly responsible for Craigslist pulling their adult ads or Backpage being seized by the feds, I do like to think that I had some small part in helping those things happen. I mean, after all, Craigslist founder Craig Newmark blocked me on Twitter, and Backpage co-founder Michael Lacey took to the media to personally call me a twitwit, whatever that is. So it's not like two of the biggest transgressors didn't know who I was. But this story isn't about me. It's about a girl living in San Diego who was 17 in 2011. In late 2011, I posted about how her trafficker, or pimp if you will, was sentenced to 30 years in prison. The girl went to the pimp, who she thought was a friend, and asked him for a job in his legitimate company. Instead, the pimp prostituted her on Craigslist, forcing her to earn a $1,200 a day quota. The pimp had previously been sentenced for trying to abduct a 13-year-old girl and forcing her into prostitution. He only served 4 years in prison for that offense. Just a little over 2 months later, I was contacted by the 17-year-old victim. She wanted to tell her side of the story, so she allowed me to interview her through instant messaging. For the sake of protecting her identity, I only referred to her as M. Here's how the interview went back in 2012. Of course, I'll be playing both parts of the interview. So I asked M, reports say that you had approached him about a job for a legitimate business that he supposedly ran. How did that turn into you being trafficked by him? M replied, I was 17, an honor student with a full-time job. I had just broken up with my boyfriend of 2 years, and it was impossible to spend 10 hours a day with him while his newfound drug problem got worse. I had been on my own since I was 12 and never without a job for more than a pay period. I went to kindergarten with both of this man's daughters. I asked my friend, his daughter, if she could put in a word for me at the place she worked. She said they were not even accepting applications at the time. She sent me to her dad, who was looking for a secretary. I contacted him with my resume and information, letting him know that his daughter referred me. We met for a coffee a couple of weeks later. By the end of the month, I was working for his company, scheduling jobs, and marketing for his business. Less than a month later, he came back to his home with a woman, scantily dressed and obviously on drugs. She took one look at me and said to him, "Tell me she's not working for you. She's just a baby." He cold-cocked her in his living room, knocked her clean out on the living room floor. She fell back and broke the table. He turned to me and said, "Now is as good a time as any. Bitch, I own you." In January of 2010, I had just turned 17 and with no family. The only people who could help me were 45 minutes away, and I had just watched this man, four times my size, demolish this woman. There I was for the next 7 months. My next question was, how did he instruct you on how to work for him? M replied, he had another woman show me the ropes. He posted the ads and chose the prices. He chose how much I would make per day, where I would work, what type of men I would see, and what I would do for each price. He had someone watching me at all times, and I had no access to phones. He collected all money and would beat me if there was not enough. And I started with my next question. Now, a lot of people seem to think, and I used to be one of them, that any woman can just walk away from that kind of situation. But that's not true, is it? M says, not at all. Like I said, I was never alone, and even if I would have had the chance, I was getting beat every day for 7 months, starved, sold, sleep-deprived. Other girls were forced to take drugs. My next question, what would you like to say to people who say that prostitution is no big deal, since it mostly takes place between consenting adults? M replied, no woman's first choice is to enter prostitution, let alone to pay a man the proceeds from selling her body. From selling her body, only to be beaten and lied to. Entering the business, even if willingly, at first comes from a place of desperation, unhealed wounds from prior abuse, and a feeling of no self-worth. Prostitution is not a victimless crime. And I followed up with, what do you feel about Craigslist and Backpage / Village Voice Media's part in all this? At the time, Backpage was owned by Village Voice Media. Later on, they split off into two separate companies, with Village Voice having nothing to do with Backpage. But I digress. M says, I was sold on these webpages as a minor for cheaper than you can rent a car. Craigslist accepted prepaid credit cards, fake names and addresses, prepaid phone numbers, and vivid and obvious attempts to sell women. So my next question, how do you react when you see sites like Backpage saying that the ads like the ones you were sold on are a free speech issue? M says, the slave traders also said the same thing, that it was their constitutional right to conduct their business in the way they wanted. I encourage you to watch this movie, and then she left a link to a movie called Flesh at fleshthemovie.com. Unfortunately, that documentary is no longer available at their website, but I did find some clips on Vimeo about it, so I will leave links to those below. Due to continued pressure from the government and the media, along with everyday folks, Craigslist shut down its erotic services section in 2010. However, the trafficking ads just migrated to the personals, which took Craigslist another 8 years to shut down. The only reason Craigslist shut down their personals was that they were afraid of being prosecuted under the soon-to-be-approved FOSTA/SESTA Acts. Meanwhile, Backpage stood fast in their belief that the human trafficking ads they hosted were protected not only under the First Amendment, but also under the Communications Decency Act of 1996. The CDA made it so platforms wouldn't be responsible for illegal content posted by their users. FOSTA/SESTA made it so that CDA didn't apply to sex trafficking. Considering Backpage was said to be knowingly making money hand over fist for these ads, they had to see the writing on the wall. However, before FOSTA/SESTA could be signed into law, the Fed seized Backpage in 2018 along with most of its assets and charged Backpage founders Michael Lacey and Jim Larkin with money laundering. Their first trial recently ended in a mistrial. Even with Craigslist and Backpage taken off the human trafficking board, the sex trafficking of women and children continues. Unfortunately, these days, the general public only seems to be concerned about child trafficking when it involves a debunked conspiracy theory about how a Satan-worshipping pedophile cabal is running the government and drinking the blood of children. What's really happening today is that child traffickers are approaching your children on social media with promises of money and a better life. Meanwhile, their parents think child trafficking either only happens through guys like Jeffrey Epstein, or they think it's an inner city thing. Child trafficking can happen to any child, and in most cases, the children are trafficked by someone they know. It can be a friend of the family, a relative, or even a parent. Child trafficking also crosses all racial and socioeconomic barriers. Where child trafficking doesn't happen is on furniture store websites and pizza parlor basements. If more people cared about the realities of child sex trafficking, then we might have less of it. Instead, most people who talk about child trafficking only do so when they can use it in their conspiracy-minded, self-serving agendas. That's it for this week's episode. For future episodes, you can go to the show's website at backinthetrench.com. From there, you'll be able to subscribe to this podcast on your favorite podcasting platform or listen to previous episodes. Again, I'm hoping to release these episodes every Sunday, but don't hold your breath, knowing my reputation. In the meantime, if you'd like to read more stories like this, you can do so at my blog, which is at realcrime.net. And you can also listen to the companion podcast, Real Crime Stories, at realcrimestories.net. Again, if you'd like to support the show on Patreon, you can do so at trenchreynolds.com. If you'd like to follow me on social media, you can do so on Twitter at Trench Reynolds. Or if you'd like to follow the shows and blog, you can do so at realcrime.net. On Facebook, you can follow me at facebook.com/realcrime.net. You can also purchase Real Crime merch by going to realcrime.net and clicking the store tab. So until next time, stay safe until we're all back in the trench.